This is Joe Basso from Music Radar, the place for music makers, and I'm speaking with Yngwie Malmsteen. Yngwie, is it safe to say you're a guitarist extraordinaire?
I think that's probably to decide on. You know, I'm definitely a guitarist. Yeah, that part I can say. Yeah.
But now, am I speaking to Yngwie Malmsteen or Yngwie J. Malmsteen?
Yngwie F. Malmsteen. No. seriously, that doesn't matter. I mean, in fact, you know, a lot of times I've been trying to explain too that I have a different name than Yngwie Malmsteen as well. That is Rising Force. That is me as well. So, okay. So just you know that those are the one and the two same things. You know.
Well, speaking of Rising Force, you do have a new album coming out called Perpetual Flame.
That's right.
And you're now using Ripper Owens as your singer.
That's right. It's a little bit of a long story, but I'll try to make it more quick. Basically, what happened was that this album was made, it was done quite differently than any, well, actually really differently than any other album I've done before. Because the traditional way I would have done it, most people would do an album, is that you start writing it, then you you put down some demos and then you show them to the guys and you put down the drums and then the bass and the guitars and then, you put the vocals down and then whatever, the rest of it, and mix it, then you go on tour, and you tour on that album.
Right.
Then you come back from that tour and start the procedure over again. So it's like a cycle. Now, on this particular record, I didn't do it like that at all. I was touring on Alicia Fury, and I was coming back home. I was just kind of throwing down ideas as I went along, just without any sort of idea of when and how new albums gonna come out of it, you know. And so I just kept on doing that, and then I had the songs, and then I went on the road, back and forth, and then I went into the studio with Patrick, my drummer, and we started putting down like 30 tracks or whatever. And I went back on the road again, and so forth and so on, on and on and on. And as the songs progressed and songs took shape, I realized that, because I write also the lyrics and the melodies, and you know, I arrange the songs to like a whole thing. You know, like I'm very particular with the lyrics, and you know, I really spend a lot of time on that stuff, more than anything else, really. And when I started the tracks, you know, so they were very close to what I ended up being, I realized that the singer that I had at the time, he was definitely not gonna, you know, that wasn't gonna work out, you know. And it's a little bit like casting a role, you know. Like if you need Robert De Niro to play the role, you can't cast Pee Wee Herman, you know. I don't remember exactly how we got together, but we talked and we've done something before, but not really, kind of. And anyways, I invited him down, and he came down and we did a couple of songs that were completely ready, and it was just, I mean, because on paper it was perfect anyway, but the chemistry had turned out to be perfect also, so we just decided to do it, and really, really is cool, because this summer we were out in Europe for like 2 months touring, so we know it works live too, so it's an awesome thing.
You're obviously most famous as an instrumentalist, and have put out instrumental albums. But does it bother you in some way that you've worked with so many lead singers that you haven't worked with just that one guy?
No, it doesn't. No, it sometimes is a bit frustrating that people seem to forget that I'm not an instrumentalist per se. I did one record that was mainly instrumental because I was in a band called Alcatraz, and the record label wanted me to do an instrumental album so I wouldn't interfere with the singer that was in that band. And that was the only reason, which is very ironic because that album turned out to be like sort of like the template for instrumental records. And that's not what I intended to do. I was never into that idea. I always wanted to write songs, and I always wanted to put a great operatic singer onto the pieces that I write. And so that's never been my intention, ever. So it's a misconception, you know. That's not what I am about at all, you know. I mean, when I do a complete instrumental, that would be with the symphony orchestra, you know. But when I do rock and roll, I did an interview, or actually, I think 9 yesterday, and it was one of the guys, he says, "Oh, man, you should just do instrumental, your guitar can carry the whole thing." I said, "Well, thank you for that, but, you know, to me, that's running with 3 wheels, you know. I want that, because to me, the expression I can do by writing the lyrics and having them delivered by, you know, someone like Ripper, you know, it's an awesome thing. You know, it sounds like Death Dealer and, you know, whatever. And so I'm very much into that, actually. In fact, I spend the most time, if anything, on that.
Has Ripper been able to ingratiate himself into the style of your music, the neoclassical elements?
Oh, he fitted right in. I mean, it was like, the thing is, I've had, as you know, I've had many singers, and they're all good and all right, you know. But the thing that I hear, and not only the operatics or melodies that I write, but also the actual delivery, the punch of you know, and the range of it, he's got all that. So it's a really a perfect combination for me, you know. I really, really enjoyed it.
Of all the tracks on the new album, and let me get the title right, Caprice Diablo.
Yeah, Caprice di Diablo.
Yes, that's a pretty amazing track. Tell me how that came about.
It's funny. That's a good question. Thank you. Basically, what happened on this record, and I applied the philosophy on all of it, which is more is more. You know, that's my philosophy. Somebody said less is more, and I don't agree with that. Less is less. More is more. Having said that, I, in a comical way, I enjoy it. I enjoy to go to the extreme of things. And in that sense, the whole album is really that way with the vocals and the drums and everything. But when it came to the instrumental piece, I decided to really push myself as much as I possibly could. I must have been having a good day or something that day, because I listened to it, I go, how the hell am I going to do that again, you know? So it's very difficult to play, but I enjoy it, you know? And that's what I call it, the devil's caprice, you know, which is, you know, a little funny little thing there.
Now, how long does it take to record a track like that, which is so intense, so elaborate? How long does it take you to get that just right?
That's also a good question, because I knew I had to do it, and I kept on putting it off. And by the end of the session, you know, like my engineer and I said, okay, well, today's the day, you know. It took a day. I spent about 4.5 hours maybe, which is quite a long time for me, actually, because usually I don't spend any time on anything else like that. I just do it, and then hopefully it's going to be good enough. That's the way I look at it, you know, because the way I play solos is everything's improvised, completely ad lib. So if I keep on doing over and over, you lose that initial passion for it and becomes more like labor. And I realize, although it's a written part and it's very difficult, then of course I do it more than once, yeah.
Have there ever been times where you've bonked a note and it's turned out to be really cool and you left it in?
Absolutely. Oh, I do all the time.
Okay.
In fact, there's a solo on the new album on the song called Priest of the Unholy,
okay,
which I use a wah pedal on it. At the end of this outro solo, and the guitar is actually going out of tune, and I tune it right in the middle of the solo. But it doesn't sound like I'm trying to tune the guitar, you know.
Let me ask you how you do your demos. Do you use GarageBand or anything like that?
No. I'm very, very old school. I have two studios. One is a very, very big, like sort of like a soundstage place where we also rehearse, which in fact I'm doing today as well. It's a full-on recording studio as well as a rehearsal room. It's a very, very high ceilings. That's where we do the drums. The other place I got is like a studio that's four rooms, but it's built inside my house. But it's not like a home studio per se. It's really a full-blown thing with two-inch studios and everything like this. And all the tube gears, and that's where I do my demos. So it's a luxury indeed. I have a little Marshall and a guitar in front of TV, and I always want to watch news or whatever. I just sit and play. And I come up with an idea. I just run upstairs and I put it down, you know. And that's nothing is done, you know, in the computer or anything like that. You know, it's very old style. And those things, sometimes if I get into it, I make it so that it's really a kind of a completed song. Sometimes it's just a couple of riffs, you know, that I go, okay, I'll use them later or something like this. So it's never exactly the same procedure, you know.
Let me ask you about the Fender replica that is being made of your famous 1972 Duck Stratocaster.
It's a 71, actually.
Oh, 71,
but,
okay.
But the thing is that guitar has been three ringer. I have had it since, I guess, 1978 or something like this, maybe 77. It's funny, I got it. I saw it in a store, in one of the stores in Stockholm as a kid. I saw it. I really like to have that one. You know, I love that look, you know. And I didn't have the cash to get it then.
Right.
So when I actually got the money, I went back and it was gone, you know. So I said, no. And a couple of months later, whatever, a year later, I don't know, I'm auditioning drummers. And this drummer comes around and he says, I'm actually a guitar player, but, you know, I want to get the gig as a drummer. I said, okay, fine. Well, bring a guitar anyway, I said, for a joke. And he brought, it was that one. And I said, I'm buying that from you. you know. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yes I am. And that's how I got it, you know, it's funny. And that's the guitar I took with me to America. I had that guitar and an extra pair of pounds, that was it. And it's also the one that appears on the cover of the first solo album, Rising Force. You know, that, so it has a lot of little twists and turns.
It's a limited run of 72, I understand?
I think it was 100, but I'm not, I cannot be totally 100% sure about that. I think it's I went to the custom shop just like 2-3 weeks ago. I was at their Fender University there. I went to their thing, and it was great. I mean, and they had about 60 of them made, and it was surreal, man. I mean, it's hard to describe because it's so exact. I mean, it's so identical, you know. It's amazing.
How involved were you with the process? Were you involved every step of the way? You know, they would do something and send it to you?
Well, but yeah. And I would look at it. But the thing is, I have to say that John Cruise and all the other master builders there, they're so good, man, that you know, there was not much I had to do. They came down and they hand-carried the guitar from here. I didn't send it. They carried it, you know, onto a plane and to there. And they kept it there for a while. Then I first saw it in Frankfurt in March. I saw the first one they made, and I just shook my head in disbelief.